Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Callin' It Podcast. Alex Barth with you, along with Alex Lebowitz on Thursday, April 18th. Recording this just after 4 o'clock. A wild, crazy day yesterday, the last couple of days. We have a lot to get to. Not a lot of time to kind of just BS off the top. Lebowitz, good or bad?
Good or bad what? I'm doing well.
All right, there we go. I'm trying to condense as much time as possible because this is going to be kind of a wild show. So
you're talking like Kevin in The Office when he...
Yeah, that's what we're doing right now.
He just leaves out words. Although it takes more time to explain why you're doing that than it does to actually say the original
sentence. I wasn't
going
to explain. I thought you would know what I was doing because okay. The last couple shows we started with me asking you good or bad. And now we've wasted a full, minute, 2 minutes?
About 80 seconds, I'd say.
All right. So here's what we're going to do today because there's so much going on. We came up with 12 topics before the show that are pretty relevant since the last time we recorded. That was Sunday morning. So there's been a pair of Bruins and Celtics games, each a handful of Red Sox games. The Masters finished. Game of Thrones debuted. The NFL schedule's come out. So you'll kind of hear the topics as we go. I have them all in a hat here, my Lowell Spinners hat. Get your tickets now, lowellspinners.com. And Lebowitz, we talked about this off the air. You're familiar with the show. Whose line is it anyway?
Of course I am. Come on.
So it's an improv show. You can Google it. The best improv game they do is called Scenes from a Hat, where they would pull a topic out of a hat and the actors would have to act it out. So we are going to do takes from a hat. We have the 12 takes, the 12 topics in my hat here. I'm going to pull them out. We'll each get about a minute to give our take on whatever it is. And then we'll go from there. So, Lebowitz, you're the road team. You want to go first here?
Sure.
All right. Go ahead.
So am I the one who's giving the take first, or will you
give the take first? You give the take first for your topic. All right. Okay. Whenever that right up next to the mic there so people can hear it. And whenever you are ready.
Okay, we'll go NBA playoffs. That's what I got first. All right.
Yep.
It's better than last year, I think. Play-wise and competitiveness-wise, we've had some upsets. We've had some tightly contested series. And it's been fun to watch. One thing that I saw that struck me is that the ratings are down 26%. And I think the one reason for this and the one reason that's been, spouted out a little bit is LeBron James isn't in this postseason. Is it the LeBron James effect? I tend to think it plays a factor for sure, and it's definitely a problem for the NBA. You have such a star-driven league. When your star isn't in the playoffs, isn't in the postseason, and it affects you, by 25% viewership wise, that's a major problem. Especially when you consider the fact that the play has been pretty good. I've enjoyed watching it personally. So I guess that's my main takeaway. It's the fact that the NBA is not doing that well ratings wise. They'll get better though.
Perfect timing. We're gonna have a buzzer after 1 minute. So you mentioned LeBron not being there. And I think it's been great because you actually have parity this year in the NBA playoffs. And we kind of talked about this on the last show, but then we had the Warriors blow a 31-point lead. Excuse me. And you have the Trailblazers going off, and they've struggled in recent years. And it's still probably ultimately the Warriors. It is the Warriors to lose, playoffs to lose. And they are still far and away the favorite. Things are interesting. When's the last time we could say that about the NBA playoffs, at least in April? It's been enjoyable to kind of see that change. And the buzzer did not go off, but that was a minute for me. All right, next topic. I'm up. Bat flips. Bat flips is the next topic. Tim Anderson is in. Obviously, he had the big one the other day. My favorite bat flip so far this year was Bryce Harper, but we're getting into this discussion again. The baseball purists, it's a respectful game. It's a gentleman's game. I do not care. Your sport is dying almost as fast as you are, old men who love baseball. So embrace the fun a little bit. Bryce Harper's bat flip was awesome. Anderson's, nobody really got a good angle on it. I understand that it's angry and cool, but we really need a better angle of it to truly appreciate it, but this is just like the pitch clock. Oh, baseball's been around since the 20s, and we didn't do it this way back then. Well, we used to not have a polio vaccine. So, sometimes change is for the best. Lebowitz.
I don't think American League pitchers should be allowed to throw at hitters. There's zero chance for retribution.
Why just American League?
because at least the pitcher in the NL will go up the
bat. Oh, okay,
the
bat. Yeah, no, I got you.
There's no shot for retribution. I also think there should just be an understanding among players that we need to make this game more exciting, and the way to do that isn't by, you know, brawling. It's by adding some flashiness. Showboating isn't necessarily a horrible thing, and I think if it comes after, you know, a great play or a big strikeout or a massive home run, it's warranted. Players just need to take themselves less seriously and understand that it's a part of the game and it's good for the game.
Absolutely. You beat the buzzer there. There it is.
And there you go.
All right, you are up. Lebowitz, next topic as we roll through games from a hat. Again, this is the Call Net podcast powered by CLNS. We got a lot to get to, so we're sort of rapid firing it here, Lebowitz.
Okay, Jeopardy. There's a champion who is making Ken Jennings look like Simple Jack. It's been impressive to watch. This guy won $131,000 worth of perfect game of Jeopardy. He went 40 for 40 in the first two rounds. He's also a professional sports gambler, which adds to it. This is a sports-related podcast. I think it's awesome to watch. I'm in awe of people who are savants like that, who just know so much information. I want to be on Jeopardy, but people like this guy, James Holzhauser, however you pronounce it, he's the reason I'll never be on that show.
So, first of all, sports and entertainment podcast, according to the Twitter bio.
Yes,
you should know that. And that is why we're talking about Jeopardy. And so I don't really watch Jeopardy that much. I actually wasn't aware of this until I saw some people tweeting about it last night, but I didn't really understand what was going on until you told me. But they put a bunch of old episodes on Netflix a couple months ago, and I ran through those, and nothing made me feel smarter than there was one part of one episode that had an NFL category, and all these – it was like a champions, you know, tournament. So it was all these people who had won Jeopardy going up against each other, and like some of the smartest people to ever play the game, and not one of them got any of the NFL questions right. So, I mean, that made me feel damn good about
that's
myself.
That's always the best. I've seen ones where it's like positions, and they're like Derek Jeter, Nomar Garcia Parra, and like Phil Rizzuto, and they're like center field. And so it's like they are completely idiots when it comes to that. It does give me some confidence.
I mean, and we're making good time here, so I'll spend a little more time on this. My argument has always been, you know, what qualifies as intelligence? You know, let's say one person knows every single element on the periodic table. It's 200 something, right? I don't know the total number. 200 something elements on the periodic table. And one person knows everybody to ever play in the MLB All-Star game. Which person, just by volume, knows more information?
The MLB person.
The MLB, right? That's at least thousands, if not tens of thousands of names. But who's going to be considered smarter? Periodic table of elements. So that's kind of why I've always, you know, just because you know all this useless, and as somebody who knows way too much useless trivia, just because you know a lot of useless trivia does not make you smart.
It makes you're better at absorbing and retaining information.
You're a good person to go to trivia with on Thursday nights.
Exactly. Drink some beers.
The other night, and some of the people who were there listen to this podcast, I'm going to be careful how I tell this story. This was, I don't know, a month ago, 2 months ago. I went with some friends of mine from high school, and you know, one of them went to Brown. You know, they're all very smart people. This whole group,
smarter than us, yes.
Oh yeah, no, they're all way smarter than I am. But we go to trivia, and there were like five or six sports questions, and that like they kept like looking at me. I answered them, and that ended up like we came in second. But the sports questions made a huge difference. That made me feel so good. You know,
I'm valuable.
I mean, they got everything else. There was a question at one point, like, what 1800s Scottish poet? And I was like, Robert Frost? And they're like, nope. And I was like, all right, you know, count me out.
Dr. Seuss?
I'm going back to my burger. All right, let's move on here. Demaryius Thomas. All right, so this one happened yesterday. The Patriots signed Demaryius Thomas to a one-year contract worth up to $6 million. The cap hit will be about a little more than a sixth of that. I think it's like 1.2 and change. This does not move the needle for me at all outside of the name. I've long thought, and I've said it on this show, I think Demaryius Thomas is wildly overrated. I think he is soft. I don't think he can hold on to the football through contact. And then you have a guy who's coming off his second torn Achilles, and everybody says, oh, he's a quick healer. He tore his Achilles. Get over it. Look, it's an interesting guy to bring in. He's certainly a talent at one point. If you can get something out of him in the red zone, which I think is all he's going to give you at this point at 6'3", then sure. but this doesn't fix things for me. I'd still like to see them come out of draft weekend with multiple wide receivers, whether it be drafting two or drafting one and trading for one. I'm not ruling out, at least from their point of view, I don't know what's going on with like the Bengals. I'm not ruling out a trade for an AJ Green type of player. And you know, Michael Crabtree is still a free agent. I would have rather they signed Crabtree than Thomas, but Thomas was McDaniel's draft pick. So it is what it is, but I'm really not putting any stock into this one. This does not move the needle for me at all. They still need wide receivers.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't the last move they're going to make and no. It shouldn't be at all.
This is Eric Decker. This is what this is.
Hopefully a little bit better than Eric Decker. I think we could see, you know, a Reggie Wayne type of situation where he retires.
Wayne was worse than Eric Decker. He was never going to be able to play. He wasn't that good. I'm still convinced that was just the Colts trying to get a man on the inside.
Point being, neither of them played it and made it out right. the preseason. So I hope it's not going to be like that. I don't think it's going to be like that. I think this guy can be a contributing factor. He still has something left in the tank. He's not going to be your number one. But if you have him come aboard and then Josh Gordon, hopefully he's reinstated before the year's end. And who knows, Gronk comes back, although we're not putting our eggs in that basket. Things can work out. So I think it's a good move. Low risk, high reward. Typical Pats move.
Very, very typical. All right, Lebowitz, this is a big one.
Okay, the Celtics. And they won last night, recording this Thursday, April 18th, obviously. 99-91 over the Pacers. They were down with like a minute remaining. Then you had Jason Tatum hit that three-pointer in the corner to take the lead, and eventually they won by eight. Kyrie Irving looked amazing. He's been showing up for the postseason. And, you know, even though the Pacers are without Victor Oladipo, they're a scrappy team. So I like the fact that the Celtics are going up against them first round. I think it's a good tune-up. I'm not saying the series is done, but being up 2-0 is a huge positive, and I think it is kind of a tone setter for the rest of the postseason, especially when it is wide open at the end of the day. The Celtics still have as good of a shot as anyone at making it to the finals.
I think that we finally saw the Celtics team we were waiting for all year on those last couple possessions. They played with confidence. They played like they knew they had the far and away the better talent on the floor. And it's the first time they've really done that with conviction, or the first time they've done it in a big spot. And yeah, I was certainly encouraged by last night. I do think the season's over. I think that the Pacers had a 7.5 minute dry spell last night. Which,
yeah, something like 8 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, the only people having dry spells that long are freshmen in college. But I just think mentally that's it for them. The next round will be very interesting, but the Celtics hope, I think it would be a huge confidence boost for them. You know, they see what they did last night. They know what they're capable of. We know what they're capable of. Now wrap this up in two more games, win two on the road, and just kind of float on an emotional high for about a week before the next series gets started. I think that would actually go, you know, a long way for the Celtics team, especially a guy like Kyrie Irving, who, shocker, he's enjoying himself. Who would have thought? All right. And we follow the Celtics up with the Bruins. These were honestly shaken up. Like, I didn't – that's kind of funny how that worked out.
Yeah.
I will say Bruins I feel good about too. I know that, you know, they lost a couple bad games, but game one to me, you know, they didn't – Toronto didn't do anything in that game that wowed me. The Bruins just played bad, and it was all fixable, and they fixed it. And then, you know, game two, they come out and win. Game three was kind of an interesting circumstance, but they come out last night. Sure, they almost blew the lead, but I think they just started playing super conservatively at one point. But they have the lines figured out, which was the biggest issue. You know, was Cassidy going to figure out what to do with David Pastrnak? He clearly did last night. They're going to get Sean Corrali back. That is huge. I feel really good about this, and we're going to do Tampa Bay and Columbus. That's also in the hat. That series will be another topic, but given the way that series worked out, if the Bruins take care of business, which best of three with two at the Garden, they really should. I really like their chances to get to the Cup final. Anything can happen there, but I really like their chances of getting there.
Yeah, and I didn't get to talk.
I know. My bad. I'm like handing you the hat. Okay. I went over a little bit. That's my bad.
Oh, I hear. So I'll just talk about Rasklin real quick. I think he's shown up and he's played pretty well throughout these first four games. He's definitely been what you need. He gave up four goals yesterday. He gave up four goals in that game one. But overall, I don't think any of that was his fault, especially in game one when the defense was lackluster.
In game four, he faced what was it?
42 shots.
Yeah, a lot of shots. Yeah.
So he's shown up and he's been what you need out of him. So it's nice to see that they're going to have some stability there in their goaltending position. And if not, you have Halak behind him. But right now, I think Rask is doing the job, and you got to commend him for you know, keeping his team in there.
And it's tough because Frederik Andersen's just been, outside of last night, insane.
Oh yeah.
So it's a lot for Rask to live up to. But like you say, he's been good enough. I mean, there's certainly room to improve. He did give up five goals last night, even with the shots. But certainly plenty of room for him to improve.
All right, let me pick out of the hat. All right, Gronkowski, Rob Gronkowski, obviously opening day. He threw out the first pitch along with a bunch of his teammates. They had, I believe, all six Lombardi trophies. And the reason we're talking about this now on the 18th is because a video came out yesterday, which pretty much showed the before the game and them taking warm-up pitches. Well, Gronkowski took the Lombardi trophy, one of them, and bunted with it. Julian Edelman threw him a pitch, and he bunted. And on the football of the trophy, there's now a dent. How much does that add to the value of the trophy when it's the one Lombardi trophy that has this you know, very cool difference? It's not subtle, but this interesting difference to it. I think he just made that trophy more valuable by kind of destroying it at the same time. So I wonder if they're going to actually rehabilitate it. I wouldn't leave it.
And the fact of the matter is, the beauty of being the New England Patriots is you want an undamaged Super Bowl trophy from a win against the Rams. You still have that, right? It's a couple of years older, but you still have it. This is like the remixed version of the Rams Super Bowl, the Patriots Super Bowl trophy against the Rams. It's so classic Gronk. No, I would not fix it. I would turn that trophy around in the display. That is an awesome story, and we can laugh about it because we have six and counting. It's a hell of a way to go out. I did not think Super Bowl trophies were hollow. I learned that today.
Yeah, it surprised me that it was.
When I saw there was a dent, I figured it was like, you know, if you open your car door into the next car, you get that little mark. I did not know Super Bowl trophies were hollow. That is news to me.
I figured they were indestructible, but that's just my childhood wonder.
Well, I mean, people have like run over the Stanley Cup. So.
And do you see the way David Ortiz was holding the commissioner's trophy? One of them. Yeah, well, he was holding it by the flags.
Remember,
and it's like he's bending it.
That broke at the parade.
It did. Yeah.
So the trophies, you just throw them in a pile at this point. Whatever the hell happens, we got enough of these effing things.
Yeah.
You know, it just maybe we are a little spoiled.
Yeah, just maybe. A little bit.
All right, let's see what we got here. All right, the Boston Red Sox. Ready to have some fun here, Lobos? Yeah. All right. So the Red Sox stink. They're a bad team. They're not a good team. Yankees fans who are cheering, congratulations. You beat a bad baseball team. They are just barely not the worst team in baseball because, you know, Derek Jeter and the Miami Marlins have no idea what they're doing. I want to focus, though, on Dustin Pedroia because I got attacked on Twitter two nights ago.
As did I.
As did you, right? That's right. By association.
Yeah.
First thing that, you know, maybe Dustin Pedroia, I didn't even say anything bad about Dustin Pedroia. I didn't think I did. I just said, you know, maybe he's hurt. Maybe he shouldn't be playing. Maybe instead of DFAing Blake Swihart, who was a first-round pick, and you've invested a lot in by not trading him year after year after year, maybe you IL Dustin Pedroia instead of DFAing that guy. And now it looks like that was before he left the game with the knee injury. Now he leaves the game with the knee injury last night. It looks like he's heading to the IL, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be short-term from the reports that are out there. So you're down Swihart for no reason whatsoever, and the Red Sox are still invested in this guy. And look, I love Dustin Pedroia, right? He gave us a bunch of great memories. That's awesome. But he's 35 years old. He hasn't really played in 2 years. He has had serious knee and ankle injuries. At a certain point, you just don't play the guy. It's getting to the point where and people say, oh, how can you not want Pedroia to play? Don't you love him? I love Kyle Yastrzemski too. I don't want to see Kyle Yastrzemski hitting leadoff, right? Dustin Pedroia is old. Congratulations, Yankees. You beat an old man. There is your revenge for Pedro Martinez and Don Zimmer. You have beaten up on, be it metaphorically this time, an old man in Dustin Pedroia. So I forgot to hit the timer. Here you go. Dustin Pedroia, 100%, should be on the IL, and the Red Sox need to figure out a way to re-sign Blake Swihart because talk about just an utter disaster.
You wouldn't take Carl Yastrzemski back, but I think David Ortiz would fit right in.
But there's okay, wait, let me clear this up because this is part of what I got attacked for. And I can't unfortunately read any of these tweets because I think there was a horrible incident with Twitter and all of the tweets calling me a moron in much worse words that I won't say have been deleted. And, you know, you just hate to see somebody's tweets incidentally get deleted. Yeah. Ortiz couldn't run either, but Ortiz still hit, what, 310? Pedroia's hitting 110. It's different. It's
if Pedroia, well, that brings up a good,
Ortiz was hitting 110, I wouldn't have wanted him in the lineup. It has nothing to do with Pedroia. So, injured players should not be playing. It's that simple.
Should not be playing the field. But this is a guy who I honestly, this brings up an interesting point because when he's healthy, he's still a good hitter. I think, like, and that's inarguable. He's still a guy who can probably hit 280, 290. Is it worth, you know, not playing him in the field and just having him for his bat? Maybe. But he can't be an everyday player. We know that. He can't play the field, really. We know that. It's just too much on his body. He's too taxing. He's too little. He's too fragile at this point. He's not getting any younger. I think he's going to hang up the cleats by the end of the year or at the end of the year. If not, he's got to look for destinations in which he does not have to play the field. And if he does that with the Red Sox, then he's probably only going to play, you know, a third of the games for the remainder of the season. And that's if he gets back on the field. And I don't even know if he can do that. He's just not durable. The guy's done. He's toast. And it's sad to see because
right, it's nothing against him. It's just what happens when you turn 35. I never understood how Mets fans could continue to count on David Wright. And now now it's in our own backyard.
And this is
David Wright.
And it is sad because you look at Dustin Pedroia's career. 2007, he wins the Rookie of the Year. 2008, he wins the MVP. And he remained a pretty good player for the next, you know, really 8 years, but still battled injury from time to time. And then now towards the end of his career, he's just breaking down completely. And it's not redeemable. And I think we're going to look back on his career as somewhat of a letdown considering how he started out. I'm not saying that it's a disappointment. But
well, it's like
there's no longevity.
Like the Brett Favre effect. If you play too long and you can't play at a high level, you start to diminish your reputation.
But he didn't have a big window. That's the problem.
He was a good player up to he was about 33. I mean, that's a 10-year. Let me pull this up real quick. I want to get the actual years, and then we'll move on to the next topic. Let me pull this up.
He was a guy.
I think it's unfair to call Dustin Pedroia a disappointment. He came up and started playing regularly at the age of 22. From 22 to 33, I mean, he was a solid 22. He actually hit 191, only played 31 games. From 23 to 33, the 10-year window where he was dominant. You can't ask for much more than that.
He was great. But you look at like 2013 and you're like, okay, this guy can make the Hall of Fame. And then he just starts getting hurt more and more. And it's just a gradual decline health wise.
He should have given up before last night because when he popped out last night, his career average is now 299. So, and it was 300 before that. So he really That's missed the bad. Boat on that. It really is. You're up.
All right. Next topic. Game of Thrones. Episode 1 was Sunday and I was aroused. It was amazing. I love Game of Thrones. I binged it for the past 2 months. A really fast clip. I'm not proud of myself for how often I watch that show, but it really is the best television I've ever watched. I put it above Breaking Bad. Next, I'm going to watch The Wire and compare it. I can't watch
The Sopranos.
And then The Sopranos, of course. Okay. I started it. I didn't keep up with it just because that's sometimes how I get through shows. I did the same thing with Game of Thrones originally.
No, I'm doing that with Cheers right now.
So, that's not in the same boat. But
I know it's not, but I need to watch. I'm from Boston. I need to watch.
I guess. I don't think it's a necessity. But it was a good episode. I think it sets up well for the rest of the season. At the end scene, obviously, where two main characters meet face-to-face for the first time in a while, and there is a history between those two, and then it ends. Perfect cliffhanger. There's a lot of other stuff. I don't want to give really any spoilers, but I'm excited. I think over the next few episodes, we're going to see a lot of stuff come up that's going to really build to the storyline and maybe explain the origin of the White Walkers a little bit more. Maybe there'll be some turn. I'm just waiting for when that turn is.
Yeah.
But it's awesome. I love the show.
So I just want to say, as somebody who does not watch Game of Thrones, the whole people wearing it as a badge that they don't watch the show is the stupidest thing. Like, I hate that because I hate it. I hate the people who, like, on Super Bowl Sunday are like, is anything going on today? I don't know. Like, they think they're cool for being above it. Like, I don't watch Game of Thrones. I'm not going to force it down anybody's throat. That's just my personal opinion. I don't need people to know that. I will ask you this, though, because we talked about this on the last show. Between the Celtics and the Bruins and Game of Thrones and your schedule, how are you doing?
Oh, yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, honestly, I can stay up for these Celtics and Bruins games when they start at 7 o'clock. And with the Red Sox starting at 6:35, last night was one of the better sports nights we've had in Boston.
Up to watch the Red Sox. Nobody should stay up to watch the Red Sox at this point.
Well, the only reason I did was because the Bruins and Celtics were on, so I was kind of flipping through. And they all ended at pretty much the same time. I love the 6:35 start time, by the way, for baseball. I think that should be more the norm.
Okay.
Because they play three-hour games.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So it was great sports. I'm fine. I'm fine. I honestly like to get sleep. I like to get 7-8 hours. I don't necessarily need it. And if I'm not getting that two nights a week, it's not the end of the world. I just like to be rested. It's my own thing.
Your turn, right?
Your turn.
My turn. All right. Yeah. Tampa Bay and Columbus. The Tampa Bay Lightning that nobody could beat, right? This all-time team. We'll talk about a little bit with the next topic, which I won't spoil. But if this was any other sport, you're talking about one of the stories of the decade. And I look, I'm not going to spend this whole time talking about how hockey doesn't get the recognition it should. It just doesn't. But Columbus is the only active franchise that had never won a playoff series. This Tampa team was supposed to be an all-time team. But Lebowitz, what had I been telling you and everybody else since February? When you get to the playoffs, Tampa collapses. It's like clockwork. I did not think they would get swept, but there's something like institutionally wrong with that team. And I will say this, if the Bruins move to the next round, and I know I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here, but if they do, everybody's saying, oh, it should be a cakewalk now, right? Columbus beat Tampa for a reason. And a lot of that has to do with Tampa, but I don't know that Columbus is necessarily the joke we all think they are. I'm really excited for a potential Bruins Blue Jackets series. I think we could actually have a lot of fun with that one. So obviously we got a way to go before we get to that, but boy, was it fun just watching Tampa get steamrolled like that.
Yeah. And that was great. I think that's the beauty of hockey. When you have a team that won the President's Cup or President's Trophy and they're just playing out of their minds, a team that the Bruins had a tough time beating this season for sure. And they lose round one to the Blue Jackets. It's just the beauty of the sport. It's awesome to watch. And although hockey is one of those unpredictable sports, this is a massive victory for the Bruins. If they do get out of the series, it's that much easier. And I think the one advantage they have going into that, this isn't really an advantage. It just will make for a better series, is that their schedule was backloaded with Columbus games. They played all four of their games within the last month of the season against Columbus. So they pretty much already had a series, albeit spread out, but they still had a series. And I think they won three of four of those. Don't know if that's an advantage or not. It's hockey, but it adds to the storyline. And it's not like Tampa Bay has a fan base that's, you know, really adding to the viewership. It's not a loss for the NHL either.
I'm sure the Tampa Bay Lightning fan is really disappointed today. I feel for him or her.
There is a decent hockey base down there. There's a lot. I knew a lot of kids from Florida
The Lightning actually do pull pretty. The Panthers are the joke down there. The Lightning actually pull okay.
And I'm sure they do, but the people I know who play hockey who are from Florida and play competitively aren't Florida-based. They're like Rangers fans or they're Blackhawks fans. They choose other teams. That's Florida fandom in a nutshell. So,
all right. Final topic.
Tiger Woods winning the Masters. First time in
what? It beautiful.
14 years he won the Masters. First time in what? 12 years that he won a major. I mean, you said it before we got on. Sports story of the year. I'd argue it's a top three sports story of the decade. This really started in 2009, this comeback. When obviously
day after Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, the personal conflict arose between him and his wife. We don't have to get into the details. It's well publicized. And then it was just downhill. Injury-wise, he started to fall apart. He was just not the same Tiger Woods that we're used to seeing in the prime of his career, one of the most dominant athletes in his respective sport when he was at the top of his game. And it's the type of thing, although he was accused of doing something that's, you know, pretty bad, people were still rooting for him. And I think it's because they kind of miss the dominance that they saw. And it's just such a spectacle to see him play and perform the way he does. So to see him come back and win the Masters, and win a major and kind of just capture America, essentially, capture the entire country, capture the world, you could argue, because this is an international spectacle.
Right.
It was remarkable to watch and to see him kind of pull away with it with the help of Molinari and a few other guys, Finau, in that last round. It was great. And you just got further and further into it. It's like, oh my God, I think he might do it. I think he might do it. And then he does it. And obviously the end of the tournament when he actually won, he hugs his son and people putting that picture next to him hugging his father, right. Elwood, in 1997. Very touching. And I think it got to be happy for him. If you're not, you got a stone, a heart made of stone.
Well, you mentioned the collapse at the end by Molinari and the rest of them. And I think what some of it was is the Tiger effect. And we see this with Brady, right? They knew. And this is – Tiger used to do this all the time. He'd be close, a stroke ahead, a stroke back. But everybody else in the field knew that he wasn't going to make a mistake, that Tiger was going to do something. So they would get overly aggressive, and they'd make the mistake, and Tiger would win. It's kind of like what we see with Tom Brady, right? Like what the Falcons did, what the Seahawks did. It's a similar effect. And like, I think my biggest takeaway from this, outside of just it's so awesome, is that a lot of people looking at this like the end of the story, like you even said, the comeback, this is the beginning of the story to me. This is the beginning of Tiger Part 2. This isn't the end, because now he's two major wins away from a fourth career Grand Slam. He's still chasing Arnold for the majors wins record. He's still chasing the overall wins record. And it's just kind of like we're doing with Tom Brady now. What can he do at 40 years old? How epic can he make this thing? So, while a lot of people talk about this as kind of the end of everything Tiger's been through, I look at this as the beginning. This is the beginning of the next
chapter. A resurrection.
Right. Now, let's go. U.S. Open coming up. If he is – so he now has 5 majors wins, 4 PGA championship wins, 3 of the U.S. and 3 of the British. I want to see if he can get the 4th Grand Slam. Now it's like, let's go. If he just disappears from here, that's a total disappointment to me. I want to see him in it at every single major. I want it to be like it used to be when he was in contention every single weekend. Give me that, and let's not make anything less of it. Let's treat them all like they were the Masters, because it should be at this point. Again, it's like Brady. We're only going to get to witness this greatness for such a small window, and it's such an elite level like we've never seen. Let's all enjoy every last second of it.
And I think that's a great point that no one, I feel like I haven't heard enough of it. It's the fact that this is huge for golf, for the PGA, because viewership's going to go way up. People are going to be more captivated.
That's what I'm worried about. It will go the other way, is that now the Tiger won, everybody will say, okay, I saw him win, and it'll go down.
No, because it's I think he still has that effect. I think people love.
I'm back and forth between both. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait. I guarantee you, though, if he stays competitive, people are going to watch. If he keeps this going and builds off of this Grand Slam level, people are going to watch. I would love to see the Grand Slam. Another consequence of a resurrection in his career. That's what we'll call it.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods PGA Tour. Bring back the video game.
Oh, absolutely.
Make PGA Tour on PS4 great again, or Xbox. I don't care. Just bring the game back, please. It was great. I love that game.
Bring me back a baseball game for Xbox 2.
That too. MVP.
Right. Do we need to do final thoughts for this episode? I mean, we kind of talked about everything.
I feel like we gave all the thoughts we have.
Since we used a spinner's hat and I am going to be their on-field MC this year, I don't know if I talked about that yet on the show. My final thought, lowellspinners.com. Go get your tickets today. I guess I'll be – and clnsmedia.com. Bunch of Patriots draft coverage on the way. I'm just going to be a company man.
There you go. Hey, there was some news that came in that I just saw. Chris Davis on the Athletics just signed a 2-year extension, $33.5 million. That seems low for a guy who's been as good of a power hitter as he has. He's 31. 31 years old.
It's Oakland. They weren't going to pay him top dollar. And
why is he staying?
Stay there. He likes Oakland.
Past three seasons, 48 home runs, 43 home runs, 42 home runs. He leads the MLB in that span, in that category, and I believe in RBI. This guy, he strikes out a lot, not great for average. He's worth more than that. And I think at this point,
you just have to be wary giving anybody named Chris Davis a big contract. That's what we didn't talk about. That is what we did not talk about.
Oh, you're right.
Of course Chris Davis lit up the Red Sox, because of course he did.
But maybe that's what it is. But they confuse them. But we're seeing this trend. Blake Snell taking 5 years, $50 million. I thought that was low. Alex Bregman, I thought, took a pretty low deal. I thought Chris Sale's deal, in hindsight, it was bad for the Red Sox. But at the time, I thought it was, you know, a decent deal for them. A lot of team-friendly contracts have been given out. And you still have Craig Kimbrell, who's waiting, supposedly, as if he hasn't taken the hint yet.
Price again. Supposedly. What? Supposedly he dropped his price again.
Of course he has. Drop the years, buddy. Yeah. Drop the years. No one's signing for 6 years, guy. So,
all right.
That's my final.
All right. That's good enough to wrap it up on. We'll be back over the weekend. I think we'll probably do the next show once one of the Bruins or Celtics, once the next series ends. And we know it'll probably be actually they both in theory need two wins. We'll do the next show once one of those series is over and we have a new playoff series to talk about pending some major story elsewhere. But that'll be our next show. It'll probably be this weekend or early next week. You can check all of our shows out at clnsmedia.com and follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.